Orale!
Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. This is your host, Jorge Martin. Familia, it's the NFL Insider Series. We're almost halfway through this, thereabouts, and it just keeps hitting that high mark, just getting so much great analysis looking ahead to the 2023 NFL season for each of the teams and giving you a little bit of fantasy tidbits. And so I want to make sure that you're following us, that you're subscribing to us on YouTube, Familia FFB on YouTube. Make sure you hit that subscriber button. Our numbers have been growing with this NFL Insider Series. Listen, set up your notifications. Get all these new shows, get them bookmarked. I've got a playlist specifically for the NFL Insider. So if you missed one, go back up there. Boom. Check that one out, but make sure you check this one out first. Finish checking this one out, 'cause this is going to be a good one. I know this is going to be one that you're going to want to check out. Also underdogfantasy.com. When you set up a new account with them, your first deposit, $100, they're going to match you that first $100. Get into that best ball season. I've been playing for 2 months now, and you know what, Familia? It doesn't matter when you draft. People could win. The last two champions have drafted in June, but it could be July, it could be August. Familia, get in their underdog fantasy and make sure you use that promo code Familia23, Familia23, if you want to do it in Spanish. And in any language, nuestro amigo Greg Thompson has just been awesome. This is the third year in a row that he's come on this podcast with me. And not only is he an expert when it comes to the Bills, he's also done so much content creation on the fantasy football side. You can find him at the Cover One Bills podcast. Familia, let's give a big bienvenido. Welcome in to our amigo Greg Thompson. Welcome. Let's get into the Bills 2023. It's I don't think anybody was more exhausted as a team that when they finished everything out last year. It was definitely rough. Everything is renewed. Damar Hamlin, looks like everything's going to be playing. God bless you. Let's start with number 17, Josh Allen. You mentioned top three quarterbacks for the Scott Fishbowl. You can go any direction with anyone, and I don't think you could go wrong. Josh Allen, first off, does everything look like he's healthy with that elbow? That as amazing season he had, he even talked about how it limited him. Oh, yeah. His outlook for this year, because he's in his prime.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he played 10 games with that sprained UCL. You saw what it did, you know, taking out all kinds of guys historically. And obviously, no better example than what we saw in the NFC Championship game with the 49ers and being in that spot with Brock Purdy. And most experts that Josh Allen probably should have missed a couple weeks, but he kind of tried to gut through it and figured it out. It really limited his ability to use the short game, an intermediate game. He still had, people were like, oh, well, he must be fine. Look at him chucking it deep. And that was really a lot of our local physiotherapy experts helped explain that, well, that's not what the UCL does. You can still chuck it pretty deep. Heck, the throw immediately after him spraining his UCL, he threw the ball 70 yards in the air and hit Gabe Davis in the chest with Sauce Gardner on him that actually could have flipped the game and on that last Hail Mary play. That was the next snap. So it's the fact that he lost that short area control. And that's why it's such a big deal for pitchers in baseball, because just throwing as hard as you can doesn't get you all that much. It's the pinpoint accuracy and the control. So if you look at those first six games, Josh Allen had way fewer of the crazy downfield throws. He was much more controlled, much more accurate in the short area. And I think that bringing that back, along with the investments that were made, they tried to fix the interior offensive line. We'll talk about some of the investments at other positions as they come up. But I think he's in a position to have a very, very good season. I think it's within reason that he'll have his best passing season. Although I think there's been enough talk about him needing to protect himself that I don't think it's crazy that he's not going to stop running. That's absurd. He's still an amazing athlete, but maybe he goes from, you know, the whatever it is. I think he's been like almost exactly 760 yards the last couple seasons. Maybe that's 450 or 500. maybe instead of 124 carries, maybe it's 80 or 90 carries. And he's still going to be one of the more run-heavy quarterbacks in the NFL, but maybe not quite as much. And I think signing Latavius Murray and Damian Harris are an indicator of that. We're like, hey, we didn't have an alternative to convert on third and two before, second, you know, with short yardage areas that we needed to convert on. Josh was our best option. Zach Moss wasn't it. Devin Singletary was a well-rounded back, but nobody would call him a short yardage back. James Cook obviously wasn't that. So Josh was the best option. Well, now, I mean, Latavius Murray's 6'3", 230. Damian Harris is 4 inches taller and 20 pounds heavier than Devin Singletary. I think that that's a little bit of an indicator that they might dial that back. So I think Josh could have his best passing season and be about the same fantasy quarterback or even 95% of what he was, because I do think some of the rushing is going to be dialed back just enough that maybe now he's quarterback three instead of quarterback one by a healthy amount, which he had had in some past seasons.
You know, you just reminded me, you talking about the running. You reminded me of a month or two ago, I sat down with Jim Hart, the legendary quarterback for the St. Louis Cardinals. And we talked about present day quarterbacks. And, you know, he talked about how much he loves to watch Josh Allen. And I remember him specifically saying he runs like a gazelle. And we both talked about the fact we'd love to see him slide a little more and not those head first dives for that extra raw yard.
Sliding, going out of bounds, picking your spots. You know, that they, I think Brandon Bean spoke about it really well, that you want to know what, no matter where it is in the season, it could be week three, but if it's third and two in the fourth quarter of a one score game, you want to know what, Josh, go get it done. The things that kill us is, hey, we're up by 17 in the third quarter and it's second and eight. And instead of going out of bounds, you put your shoulder down into the linebacker. Like, come on, man. Like, it's okay. Like, you don't have every single extra yard isn't equal. They're not all equally weighted. When we have a lead and it's not third down, it's not the fourth quarter. Like, it's okay to pick your battles. And I think he's now talked about it to where I think some of that is going to sink in. And again, that's where I don't think it's going to go away. Running is going to be a huge part of what he does. The scrambling is very organic. It just happens. He's not going to stop doing that. But maybe some of those decisions help take a little of the ceiling off some of those rushing numbers. But hopefully, we'll talk about here with some of the other weapons. Hopefully, he makes it up in the passing.
Just one quick question about Ken Dorsey as a play caller. So, you know, last year was definitely his first time calling plays after Brian Daboll left for the Giants.
First time ever calling plays.
So
at any level.
And now talking about that, is there more comfort level in the offense with him at the helm?
So I think so. And I think that you heard plenty of endorsements and don't get me wrong. There's pressure, like there's expectations.
There should be.
I think people have a misconception of what last year felt difficult. It felt disjointed. There were times where it didn't seem like they were, you know, cooking up those easy plays that some guys seem to get, and they have the second most points in the NFL and the exact same amount of points per game as Brian Daboll had the year before. So like how terrible it was, like, yeah, settle down. You know, it's now I will say it was two different seasons. Those first six games prior to the UCL injury, Josh Allen was by far the leading candidate for MVP. We were asking openly, did we accidentally upgrade at offensive coordinator and we got better with Ken Dorsey than Brian Daboll? Because he was introducing things we hadn't seen before. Then it's hard to know how much some of both. Some of it absolutely was the UCL injury just took a third of the playbook out of Ken Dorsey's pocket. He just couldn't call it. And it did seem like he didn't have the counterpunch to some of the adjustments the defensive coordinators made after they saw his first six games and said, okay, well, we're seeing him do this. We need to do this. He didn't have that next secondary adjustment on top of that. So I think it's reasonable to assume that an intelligent man that is capable and earned that position now is going to be ready to make those adjustments and has a healthy Josh Allen. So I feel okay with it, but I will say there absolutely is pressure on him this year to perform. It needs to continue to be at the standard we've seen, which is one of the leading scoring offenses in the NFL, and it needs to look a little smoother, more consistent, and as easy as it did early in the season.
Yeah, I was. I don't think I told you, but I was at the opener, Rams and Bills, and after that game, I was like, they looked unstoppable.
Oh,
absolutely unstoppable. I was.
Like, I randomly rewatched that game last week. It was so fun. Opening touchdown to Gabe Davis, the little leak play where they pretended to have him block and he trotted into the end zone untouched. We need a little bit more of that.
Yeah, I said, well, we're going to talk about that pretty soon. Yeah. By the way, I sent a picture of myself to Troy King, who's been the biggest Gabe Davis apologist out there. And at T King mode. He was very happy. So it was a tough day for Ram fans. But before we get into the receivers, I want to jump into the running back situation because it's, you know, James Cook got drafted fairly high last year, but he's not a big bruising back. People talked about him, you know, getting more work in the passing game. That didn't get all that much last year. Devin Singletary leaves. Damian Harris, as you mentioned, a bigger back going in there, and Latavius Murray is in there. This is a muddy backfield. Can you help me make heads or tails of this backfield?
No, I'd love to lie to you and tell you I have the answer. So Aaron, my co-host and I, we just did our running back position preview. We go each position by position on the team leading up to training camp, help fans get caught up. Our hardest one was the running back position because there's a couple different things you can look at. Is running back one a position in Buffalo that just exists in the space of, hey, for the last 3 years running, and this is just 3 years. So we just went back to 2020 when we saw that big leap offensively from Josh Allen and a 3-year sample size. It was very consistent what that running back one role was, even no matter who came in to try to compete, it was still Devin Singletary, and he consistently had 175 carries and 50 targets every single year. Super consistent, not even a ton of variance to it. So I also talked about, we kind of think some of that's going to be muted from Josh Allen, that like 15% of Josh's rushing attempts, I think, is going to go to the backfield. So I think that not only is there a high scoring offense, but I actually think there's a bit more opportunity here where the running backs are going to get, I don't think the Bills are going to run more, but I think the running backs on the Bills are going to get slightly more carries and more touches in a high powered offense. So now, if James Cook just steps into that role, you're talking about 200 carries for 900-plus yards, 50 targets for 40 receptions, and 1,200 total yards, if it's simply him just replacing Devin Singletary. So now, as you put on the screen, what does it mean that they added not only Damian Harris, but also Latavius Murray?
Right.
They just did, the Buffalo News just did an interview, Ryan O'Halloran, shout out to him, a really good interview, with running backs coach Kelly Skipper, who talked about last year how big of a difference the fans really underestimated the language and the route running concepts from Indianapolis to Buffalo, that Nyheim Hines really struggled to grasp what the running back position needed in their offense. And he knew Indy inside and out and could line up as a slot receiver and out of the backfield, and that they have that back now. And their expectation is he will have a bigger role in the passing offense. So I don't know what to tell people, in that there's four mouths to feed in that offense. And that I do think James Cook is the most valuable asset, has the highest upside, and is, if I'm going to put my chip on one piece, it is James Cook, because I think there's enough uncertainty that he's a little deflated in fantasy drafts. But if you told me at the end of the year that Damian Harris and Latavius Murray combined for 10 touchdowns, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, if that's what their focus is, to get Josh out of those like battering ram things, that's kind of what they do well. If you told me that Nyheim Hines ended up with 50 targets in the offense. And for, you know, he did that in Indy with Jonathan Taylor was there. That didn't mean he was better than Jonathan Taylor. It just meant he was really good at that role. Why can't Buffalo use him in that role? So I think there's a world where James Cook has 200 carries, 50 targets, 1200 total yards, and is not a league winner. I don't see a world where the Bills offense produces a league winner running back, but is a, hey, he was one of your three dart throws at running back two, and he ends up giving you almost low-end RB1 production. I think there's a world where that's true. I also think there's a world where Damian Harris and Latavius Murray frustrate you and steal the touchdowns, and Nyheim Hines frustrates you by getting a bunch of the catches, and James Cook has 180 carries for 800 yards and not that many catches and not that many touchdowns. And like in real life football, I'm excited while watching it. But as a fantasy owner, like those, that range of outcomes is absolutely possible. So I would suggest to any fantasy drafter, especially if you're in best ball leagues, I don't think a last round dart throw on Damian Harris or Nyheim Hines is crazy. I think there's some potential nice games there. In regular drafts and anything that you're building around, it's all about value. If you got somebody that's really excited about James Cook and is drafting him at that higher end, I would let them. If he starts to fall at all and is there as a value, there is that upside. There is that possibility. I just wouldn't pay for it. I would need to get it at a spot where I feel like, hey, I'm safe. I'm drafting him as an 800-yard guy with 35 targets. And if I get more than that, I'm getting value. If you're drafting him where he needs to get you over 1,000 all-purpose yards, I would feel uneasy if it was me.
Yeah, right now he's going off as the running back 30 and number 95 overall. And it's kind of like right there, that value.
Give me a couple other running backs going around him if you have it in front of you.
Sure. Alvin Kamara is going five, six picks later. Javonte Williams is one pick before Zach. But then you start getting into Zach Charbonnet. Antonio Gibson.
And I assume, I mean, Javonte has to be the injury stuff, and Kamara, assuming, has suspension built in. So obviously both of those have much higher per game upside. But yeah, like a guy like Charbonnet, I would take Cook over Charbonnet, I think, for role in offense. I think that's a fine pick.
Yeah.
That area makes sense to me. That area makes sense, especially pick 95. You're talking, that's a flex spot. That's your third running back. You know, you've already solidified quarterback, tight end, RB1, and multiple receivers. Mm-hmm. And now maybe that's, you know, your second dart throw at RB2. That makes total sense to me. So if you can get him at that range, I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, Damian Harris is about 20 picks later, going in a range with Rashad Penny and Devon Achane or behind Hudson is right before. So it's kind of... So
I would say... I don't see a non-injury scenario where Damian Harris returns value. Now, if James Cook gets hurt, Damian Harris all of a sudden steps in and can be Devin Singletary. I don't see a scenario where he is a primary back while the other guys are healthy. Because if Cook got hurt, I think Hines would even go up more in the passing game because Cook at least is a good receiving back. Mm-hmm. But if Cook goes out, they're not going to give Damian Harris that role because they have Nyheim Hines.
Right.
So if anything, Hines would go up even more in the passing game, and that, yeah, Harris might give you some 14, 16, 18 carry games, but I don't see any targets. It would be all touchdown dependent. And I think that Harris is a 6 to 8 carry guy when Cooks is healthy. I don't see him just beating out Cook. So he's a handcuff to me. He's a late round flyer, but if it's only that much further down, I would hold off on Harris at that price personally.
Yeah. Cause that's you're talking about like the, you know, 11th, 12th round at that point. Yeah. And it's 10th, 11th round. So it starts getting a little, it might be a little dicey.
Yeah. He's All not, right. he's not previous Alexander Mattison to me, where that's where like the high end handcuffs go, mm-hmm. things like that. He's not that for me.
Well, let's get into the passing game. You got Stephon Diggs. There's obviously been some back and forth and some concern, as Sean McDermott mentioned, but he's still getting drafted in the first round, tail end of the first round. I mean, can we still book 100 receptions, 1,400 yards?
100%. I don't think there's any question. So like everything, there's different versions of the truth. Was he upset enough that he needed to utilize mandatory minicamp to make sure everyone knew how he felt about something? Yes. But did that actually change? He just wanted to feel good about the role that was there, the changes that were going to be made, pressure from Ken Dorsey. Honestly, some things with Josh Allen that the two of them needed to work out. And I think most of that has taken place and is in good shape. And you saw the two of them next to each other all day the next day at minicamp. Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs next to each other talking the whole time. So, you know, do I think that there will be another time where a guy who has spent most of his offseason in France doing fashion model shoots will continue to enjoy people talking about him and cameras taking pictures of him and attention being spent on him? No, I don't expect that to stop. I expect that someone who loves attention will continue to enjoy loving attention. Also, he's not going to miss any games. He's not going to miss any time. The Buffalo Bills literally can't trade him, even if they wanted to. If he came out today and said, "I will never play another down for the Buffalo Bills," they still couldn't trade him. Like his contract is a complete anchor. They gave him a huge extension and just restructured it earlier this year. He's on the Buffalo Bills the next 2 years, no matter what. There's nothing they can do. So he should go in the first round because he's going to get 160 to 170 targets from Josh Allen, and it's going to be great. And all things considered, whatever you want to talk about him in Minnesota, in Buffalo, whatever antics, whether that bothers you or not, the man shows up and is phenomenal at football. He misses no games. He misses no snaps. He shows up and plays great, and he will do that again this year.
Yeah, and I've been drafting him confidently, 100%. Even a couple of times.
If anybody else feels iffy about it and lets him slide at all, laugh the entire time you're taking him.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've grabbed him and once, maybe twice, in an underdog draft. I grabbed him and then grabbed Josh Allen in the second round just to get that stack right off the way. Absolutely. If they blow up in week 17 when they play the New England Patriots, which has happened before.
It would not be the first time. Stephon Diggs has stuck it to the Patriots multiple times. Yeah.
Yes. So done it. Yeah. And on championship week, by the way. So yes. That was, I think it was 2020. So when he did that. So that was
the near really perfect game. Yeah.
Oh man, that was
the actual perfect game was in the playoffs, but they had two games where Belichick couldn't make the Bills punt. And that was the first one.
Oh man. Well,
now, unfortunately, everything after Stephon Diggs?
Yeah, let's go for it.
So again,
is Gabriel Davis ready to be the two?
This is super similar to my comments about the backfield in that
right.
I feel really good about what the Buffalo Bills have put together for real football. I love the depth of options. I love having Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid. I love that I think they upgraded from Isaiah McKenzie to now having Deontay Hardy. Formerly Deontay Harris, as most people knew him in New Orleans. Trent Sherfield's better than Jake Kumerow. I like having a dart throw like Justin Shorter. I was excited about Khalil Shakir last year. I like the collection of talent that they put together because no matter who's having a big game or how it goes, they have options all over the place. Unfortunately, I don't know how predictable and dependable those alternatives are going to be in fantasy football. Now, the good news is that's very much baked into the draft slots. I think that all the shine is off Gabe Davis. You've seen him just tumble down draft boards compared to last year was crazy. People couldn't get that 4-touchdown game against the Chiefs out of their minds. and he was never that guy. I had Bills fans last year telling me Stephon Diggs was expendable because we had Gabe Davis, and I kept trying to be like, I like Gabe Davis as a wide receiver too. He doesn't have the skill set to ever be a wide receiver one. Like, he's just not that guy. He's a nice wide receiver too. Like, he just is. You know, I think he has the upside to maybe be Mike Williams someday. Like, that's the kind of thing. But like, even the Chargers, like, you don't build an offense around that. That's his one trick is a really good trick, but he's still kind of a one trick pony. Like, that's how it works. You don't have the options of the route tree to be able to do like you do with Stephon Diggs. So I think Gabe Davis is again in that 90 to 100 target range. I think maybe they can bring back some of the average depth of target. His ADOT was crazy last year. I think like number one or number two in the NFL. I think he led the league in yards per catch, which is not a sustainable stat, and led to the low catch rate, led to some of the different issues with – he did have some drop issues, but a lot of it was because all of them were 30 and 40 yards down the field. So I think we see a higher catch rate, but also bring some of that ADOT down to where – it's the same kind of season. Like, I don't think it's going to be this huge explosive game. So if you see Gabe Davis, you know, he's not a horrible handcuff. If something happened to Diggs, maybe it would go up enough, but you know, having the kind of production that he had last year at 836 yards, 7 touchdowns, like, I kind of think that's what we're going to see again. I just think that's the kind of performance I think that we'll get. Maybe it's 55 or 60 catches, and maybe it's 900 yards, but I just don't think there's some sneaky 1A, 1B scenario. If anything, some of the other weapons that they've added with Dalton Kincaid, I'm actually a sneaky big Deontay Hardy fan. I think if there's any late round flyer dart throw that you're going to throw, that's the guy. So I'll ask you a quick question here, Jorge, to put you on the spot. If you had to guess last year, how many targets do you think Isaiah McKenzie had for the Buffalo Bills?
I have the page up in front of me, I'm not going to say,
okay.
I'm not looking at it. I have a tab open next to this link. Isaiah McKenzie last year, I'm going to say 70.
Okay. That's about right. It was actually 65. If you ask most Bills people, like people who cover the team and are involved in it every day, I did this with a handful of other people. All of them would say 30, 34, 38, 40. I think a lot of people underestimate how much they tried to get him involved in the offense. They then went and paid Deontay Hardy double what they paid Isaiah McKenzie the year before, and went out and signed him when Isaiah McKenzie could have just come back. I think there's something there. I think that they see that slot position and what they lost when they lost Cole Beasley, how impactful that was. I think that they tried to force that to Isaiah McKenzie last year and then went out and paid twice as much money to Deontay Hardy. I think there's something there, and I think if you go back, not that I expect to get the yards per route run that we saw from Deontay Harris in his, you know, last full season with New Orleans. But in that year, he was fifth in the NFL in yards per route run, or, you know, actual production in what was out there for the opportunities he got. And that was with horrible quarterback play, like Trevor Siemian and Taysom Hill. And so I think there's talent there that, with an offense like this, I think we see some spike weeks. So in best ball leagues and in some of the year-long best ball, I think there's some exciting things that can be had there where I don't feel like he's going to have the week-to-week consistency that can do it. But again, just right over my head here on the screen is the underdog logo. I don't think it's crazy for the last round to throw a pick at Deontay Hardy here and there, just to give yourself a little exposure, as like to call those some of those strategies with the super stacks and things like that. You already have Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. You're already banking on a big week from them. Throw a little something at Deontay Hardy here or there, because I think that could end up giving you some monster weeks when he does hit. He's going to hit a couple like 6 yard slants that he takes for a 60 yard touchdown. If you can be ready and have him there in a couple of those weeks and not have to worry about predicting it, I think there's something there.
Going number 215 right now on Underdog. So that's a great last round flyer.
It's free. It's just, you know, and I'm not saying every draft to pick him in the last round. But I will say last year I was saying similar things with Isaiah McKenzie, not because I thought he was going to be some, you know, league winning monster, but because I thought he was going to go from the historic 25, 30 targets to be like, hey, I watched him here. He's going to get 60 plus targets and he got 65. So now he didn't produce as much with those as what they hoped, but I think there's a chance Deontay Hardy will, and I think he's going to get the opportunity.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Well, you talked about the slot position and you know, the importance of the slot position. You brought up Cole Beasley. There's been some talk about the tight end position, Dalton Kincaid coming in as a big slot. You know, I was looking at some of the comments and I heard an interview with Josh Allen talking about, you know, that Kincaid still needs to learn the offense. To me, I think there was too much projection for fantasy players saying that Kincaid is going to come in and be a 6'5" Cole Beasley. And I still think Dawson Knox is going to be a big part of this offense, and he's going to have some spike weeks. But I'm coming to you. What's your call on this one?
So I think that the Bills have tried very hard to be able to shift into more of a 12 personnel team for multiple years in a row. They tried it with Tyler Croft. They tried it with Jacob Hollister. They tried it with OJ Howard. They've tried multiple times with like the thrift shop value dart throw to bring in a second guy, and they kept missing. So I think finally they said, you want to know what? Screw it. We'll just do it with a major investment. We'll trade up in the first round to go get our number one tight end. And many people had as their number one graded pass catcher in the draft. So Dalton Kincaid, they go out, they grab him. You know, Daniel Jeremiah's number 9 overall player. Danny Kelly's number 12 overall player. A guy that they were very excited about, that they knew they needed to jump ahead of Dallas to be able to go get. So people will then say, well, but didn't you just sign, you know, Dawson Knox to a $14 million per year extension? Yes, Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid play the same position like Evan Ingram and Pat Freiermuth play the same position. Like, yes, technically they're both labeled, but they're not the same thing. Like, they just don't do the same thing. So when you build a 12 personnel offense, you don't build it by having two Pat Freiermuths. That's not how you build it. You build it where you have versatility of skill set, where they can do different jobs, and you have a Y tight end and an F tight end. Well, Dawson Knox at 6'5", 260 and chiseled is a great Y tight end. He's a really good help blocker. He's the reason that I feel a little bit better about Spencer Brown going into this year, because we can just park Dawson Knox over there next to him every single snap and let him be the extra helper to Chip on his way out. And now we don't have to have him be the only receiving option in the passing game, because we have Dalton Kincaid, who is a willing blocker. But I think that on passing plays in Utah, he blocked 12 times the entire season. Like, you're drafting him to go out in routes, and he's a phenomenal route runner. He has incredible fluidity to be able to get in and out of cuts without slowing down. He has this weird ability where he goes through cuts, and then all of a sudden he's like more open, even though he doesn't have that like crazy Cole Beasley like stutter step thing, like you're running a basketball crossover, where you can see him like slam his foot in the ground and cut the other way and just explode out of the cut faster than everybody else. For Dalton Kincaid, it's that he doesn't slow down, and it's very fluid the way that he runs his routes. So I think it might take a minute. Most rookie tight ends don't come on like crazy. If you're in dynasty, I very much want to invest in Dalton Kincaid. Mm-hmm. In redraft and in normal leagues, I think he's the guy that later on in the season could really pay dividends, because I do think he's going to be a big part of that slot package as the year goes. And I think that if the Bills go from last year, they were the lowest rated 12 personnel team in the league. They only ran 12 personnel with one running back and two tight ends 4.8% of the time. league average is between 20 and 25%. So if they just bump up to 20, 25%, now you have both guys on the field for 25% of the snaps. Then that leaves the other 75, 80% of snaps there. They could split those 50-50 and each of them have 40% each of the tight end one snaps when there's only one on the field. And then if both are on the field for 25%, all of a sudden they both get 65% of the snaps and they're out there running 65% of the snaps, getting plenty of targets. I think they're both going to be in the 60 to 70 target range, I think is reasonable. Mm-hmm. 50 to 70, somewhere in that ballpark. Early on, a little bit more Knox. Later on, probably a little bit more Kincaid. But I think that they're, again, I think this Bills offense, the reason Josh Allen is so exciting is because there's so many options all around him.
Yeah.
The frustrating part for people in fantasy is they have so many options all around him. It's really hard to like put your pin in there. So all of it, this entire Bills offense, fantasy wise, is value based. If they fall to a spot, take advantage of the fact that you're getting a flyer in an incredibly high scoring offense. But besides Stephon Diggs, I don't feel super confident in predicting, oh, this guy is the guy you got to have, or that guy is the guy you want to have. I just want the guys that I think people are too cheap on and are waiting too much on. Like you said, Dawson Knox is going to have some spike weeks. He's going to have some good touchdown weeks. I kind of think Dalton Kincaid will as well. I think Dalton Kincaid is going to be a really good value in the red zone because we haven't had like a go-to red zone guy. That's not Stephon Diggs' best asset. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's intriguing, but ultimately it's going to come down to all of those different options, lifting up, making it hard for teams to double team Stephon Diggs, making Josh Allen the consistent weapon that he's going to be. And then hope you hit right as the season goes on that, hey, someone out of these names we talked about probably is going to be a big impactful fantasy guy. I wish I could tell you who it's going to be. It's so hard with the number of options they brought in.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, when you were talking about Dalton Kincaid, I just had a flashback to last year, the kind of like the last, definitely second half, maybe the last third of the season, when two guys, Greg Dulcich and Chick Okonkwo, kind of came out, two rookie tight ends kind of came out of nowhere. And I'm kind of wondering if that's kind of the same trajectory for Dalton Kincaid. So something to think about.
Yeah, I think it's right there. It's the exact kind of logic that we could see, and you saw how his progression came on as the season went. I think that's very much going to be this year with even a higher early floor because of the draft investment.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm going to real quick offensive line. You talked about the offensive line a little bit there, you know, Dawson Knox maybe staying in and helping out the right tackle, kind of state of the union on the offensive line. It's been kind of like a middle of the road group up till now.
Yeah. So I think this is going to be the best offensive line that Josh Allen has ever had. That's a true statement. Also, it's probably barely above average offensive line. So it's not like all of a sudden it's an amazing offensive line, but Roger Saffold was so bad last year. Like it was, they tried to do that, you know, late career dart throw guy to see like, oh, does he have one more good season in him? He did not. He did not have one more good season in him. And then we had injuries all over the place everywhere else. Mitch Morris missed games. Deion Dawkins missed games. Deion Dawkins and Mitch Morris struggled because of trying to compensate for Roger Saffold being in the middle there. That meant Mitch Morris wasn't helping Ryan Bates, which we kind of thought he was going to be able to do because they thought that Saffold was going to be the answer. And we had some health issues where Spencer Brown didn't have any offseason. He barely got back in time for the season and then was okay as the year went. So now we get a healthy offseason. Aaron Cromer's first healthy offseason with Spencer Brown. We made huge, a nice investment taking Connor McGovern from the Cowboys. We have a healthy Ryan Bates, but also brought in David Edwards, who started all 17 games and all four playoff games for the Super Bowl Rams. Then we took a second round pick with Osiris Torrance. All those things together, they brought in, they brought back David Questenberry and brought in Brandon Shell from the Dolphins as just an extra swing tackle. So they now have 11 or 12 NFL caliber offensive linemen. I actually expect a couple cut down day trades just because they have so many guys that somebody's not going to make this roster. So having that depth, I think Connor McGovern, and I think it's going to be Osiris Torrence, but even if it's still Ryan Bates, having that means David Edwards and Osiris Torrence are your backup guards. So we're going to be in way better position there. Now, hopefully, Deion Dawkins and Spencer Brown are healthy, but now we have Brandon Schell and David Questenberry just as backups, as just available options to be there. So I think the floor is going to be higher for that offensive line, and Josh Allen won't have to be running around like a chicken with his head cut off half the time, and can build in more confidence in the timing and to hold it for those five-step, seven-step drops where we really lost that ability last year because he was so, you know, constantly frantic and having to run around. So I don't think we turned into some amazing top five offensive line, but maybe now we're in that 10th to 15th range of just a good above average offensive line. And with this offense and all the rest of the weapons, that'll be enough.
Oh yeah. Because honestly, yeah, you give Josh Allen a little bit of time to, I mean, you give him enough time for some of those deep shots or just at least to, you know, get connected with that, with all of those weapons. Yeah. He doesn't need a lot of time to do what he needs to do. So, oh, awesome. On the other side of the ball, Von Miller out for, you know, missed a big chunk of the season. Obviously, it takes about 9 months, 9 to 12 months. A bigger guy, and it's his second ACL. But how did they shape up first against the pass that, you know, Tre'Davious White is now healthy? You know, how do they shape up against the pass, and how much of a lift could they get with DeMar Hamlin coming back, just emotionally and also talent on the field?
So that's a good example where I think that DeMar Hamlin may come back, may make a really nice lift to that locker room, and probably as our fourth safety. So he played last year because Micah Hyde only played 2.5 games. Mm. We lost him during week 3. Micah Hyde's back fully healthy and ready to go. They re-signed Jordan Poyer. They added Taylor Rapp. So now, again, the depth that they have there, you now have 4 starting caliber safeties, NFL, you know, starting caliber safeties. So I think that helps. The same idea. I think they're going to be very conservative with Von Miller. He talks about he's going to be back week 1 because Von says a lot of crazy things. But I hope they don't. I hope they wait. And that's why they went and signed Leonard Floyd. Because we can have Leonard Floyd, Gregory Rousseau, Shaq Lawson, AJ Epenesa. That's fine for the first handful of games. Let that get right. And then it can be Von Miller, Leonard Floyd, and Gregory Rousseau as the main 3 being able to rotate and play like 60% of snaps each. Then you're really talking about something. I love the fact that we saw how impactful Daquan Jones was last year. Well, now they went and added Puna Ford. So we now have a 1-tech on the field at all times. They're going to have somebody impactful and powerful there at all times. They extended Ed Oliver, and now Jordan Phillips and Tim Settle just get to be the rotational 3-tech guys behind them. So, again, waves of talent coming at you, depth of talent all over the place. The big question is Tremaine Edmonds. Tremaine Edmonds was the kind of big – he was like a pterodactyl in the middle of the field, just crazy long wingspan, taking away zones and everything like that. Matt Milano is still the playmaker of that defense. But who replaces Tremaine Edmonds? Is it Terrell Dodson? Is it Terrell Bernard, last year's third-round pick? Is it this year's third-round pick, Dorian Williams? Is it a Band-Aid like A.J. Klein? You know, we'll see. I think there's a wide-open competition at that linebacker spot. And that could impact some of the pass defense because they've been one of the top 5 passing defenses in the NFL for 5-6 years running now. With – you know, the back half of the everybody around that linebacker spot is a guy next to him like Matt Milano. The chance to come off the field and run more dime with Taylor Rapp playing dime linebacker. Then Trey White, Kyir Elam, Taron Johnson in the slot, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer behind you. That linebacker is going to be set up to be pretty good. This pass defense is going to be good again. They got the, you know, 8, 9, 10 man rotation on the line in front of them. They got the secondary behind them. I don't think one linebacker is going to have that crumble and fall apart, but it is a big spot that I'm watching here in training camp.
How about against the run game?
So the Bills have always leaned being more comfortable begging you to run, asking you to run. Every handoff is a gift. If you want to hand the ball off and hope that you don't give the ball back to Josh Allen, God bless you. Go ahead. So I expect that to be the same. You know, now we'll be fine. It's still a bunch of talented guys. Daquan Jones and Puna Ford really help. Gregory Rousseau is awesome against the run. Shaq Lawson's good against the run. They have some guy, you know, Matt Milano's still very instinctual and will blow up plays. But we're not, you know, it's not Sam Adams and Tony Siragusa sitting in there. Like, it's right. It's not, we're that's not what they're focused on. They are focused on being fast and athletic and rangy and covering area. And they know that today's NFL is a passing league. And that if every once in a while you have a game where you kind of get punched in the mouth, it's going to happen. We're just going to bet that Josh Allen's going to outscore you more times than not and get you into a, you know, pass only mode where you're just trying to catch up and keep up score for score. And if we have what it will take is an opponent capable enough to have the discipline to keep running against us and that you're slowing down Josh Allen and not letting him score. And I think we're going to roll the dice that's not the case all that often. So I don't think they're going to be a great run defense, but I also don't think that many teams are going to be able to put them into a position where it's going to matter.
Right. No. Awesome. Yeah. Not too many teams are going to be able to get a lead against Josh Allen. So yeah,
that's what they're going to gamble on.
Well, this has been awesome, Greg. This has been awesome, amigo. Last one. You know, you always want to talk a little food at the end. Any new Mexican food discoveries or any hot takes, caliente takes?
No. So having some fun. I actually have the stuff downstairs to do a nice, like a taco bar. Just got some different stuff. I'm making some. I love carne asada, so I got some nice you know, pounded out thin cuts going that I'm gonna grill up. I've got some, you know, traditional just some ground beef and things like that, and just let everybody make up whatever they want. And I've got all kinds of fun, you know, queso and salsa and guacamole going everywhere, and we'll have a good time and enjoy it. So it's one of our favorites here at home. So looking forward to making that my daughter's favorite food. So we love the Mexican options here in our house.
Oh man, mi amigo, and I've loved this conversation. One more time, pump anything you got coming up. Yeah. I mean, you got
all kinds of good stuff. So obviously, everything over at Cover One. You can find us, just search Cover One on YouTube, wherever you're listening to awesome shows like this. You can find me at Greg Thompson on Twitter, hosting their Cover One Buffalo podcast and the Greg Thompson Sports Show. So having a little bit of fun outside of football. This Friday night, we're actually going to be doing our What If draft of talking through just Ooh. Fun people coming out talking about what if it happened. So, you know, what if Bo Jackson hadn't hurt his hip? What if Mo Lewis didn't light up Drew Bledsoe? Just some fun different things over the years of what could have happened if those big ultimate moments didn't come to fruition. So just a fun discussion, some really smart people coming on to talk about that with me and just having a good time. Come on and check us out.
Oh, awesome. Awesome, amigo. This is fantastic. Yeah, what if Bo Jackson. These things happen. Eso pasa. Well, I can't thank you enough for doing this, familia. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did, because then I know you will have enjoyed this a lot. And you made sure that you have given us a like and subscribe. You know, give us that thumbs up, hit that subscriber button over there on the YouTube page. And also, again, you know, we've teased it a lot in this show. Go to underdogfantasy.com, use the promo code FAMILIA23. You're going to get matched up to the first $100. Again, you can find me at Jorge Martin 17 on Twitter, Familia FFB everywhere else. I push all the content out through there. And again, FamiliaFFB.com, going to have some articles coming out. So check it out. So Familia, enjoy this. This is right now. It's we're recording this on the eve of the 4th of July. Feliz 4 de Julio. Happy 4th of July, everybody. Happy birthday, America. And remember, todos somos familia. Salud. Mm-hmm.